everyone, and welcome to Living a Life Through Books, the podcast about everything bookish. I'm your host, Dr. Shanaz Ahmed, and today is Book Club. Before I bring up our conversation, I wanted to say that your support of my podcast means a lot to me. The easiest way is to buy me a coffee. Go to buymeacoffee.com/LLTB podcast. Every coffee you buy me helps keep me alert and this podcast going. I'll add the link in the show notes, and I thank you. And let's get straight to Book Club. All right, everyone, welcome to Book Club. Today we are doing Orphan Train by Christina Baker Klein. And first thoughts about this book.
Oh, I'll go. I really enjoyed this one. I thought it was very sweet and touching. I really liked the connections that Molly and Vivian made, and their kind of, you know, similar histories and how they both kind of needed each other and then connected that way. So I really liked it.
I completely agree. I thought it was very sweet. I thought it was poignant. I just, everything about this book, it's just, it was very heartfelt. You know, you just feel it on the inside, and it's warm, fuzzy, but it also hurts. You know, it's a combination of both. And it was like, I'm so glad I picked this book. I didn't know what we were getting into. And then I was like, well, this is a good book. I'm glad. It's a great book to end the year with.
Me three, I agree with both of you. You know, it was a really good book. I finished it in one sitting. So that's why I could, you know, because it didn't let me keep the book down, because it was, as Shana said, it was fuzzy, it was warm, it was sad, it was, oh my God, what happened? A little bit of history, writing a book with, you know, a single piece of history, a whole book, and making, you know, good for the readers to read without putting the book down. I think it was a good book. And thanks, Shanaz, for picking it up.
It was a very accidental pick. Sophia, first thoughts about the book. Welcome.
Yeah, Shanaz, I have to leave in 15 minutes, so I'll give my thoughts. Sorry, I have somewhere to go. But I really liked the book. It was very eye-opening, and I would have never known about this orphan train and this situation with the orphan kids in America. I would have never thought about it. So it was really eye-opening. So this was a precursor to the foster parenting system, which we have now. So before the system was in place, this is what was going on. And I always thought that they were just orphanages and orphans were just sent there. I never thought that this is how they were placed. So very eye-opening, yes.
Yeah, you guys weren't there. Like, Dr. Jen, were you there when we did Before We Were Yours? Okay. Oh, wow. All three of you weren't there when we did this book called Before We Were Yours, where it was kind of similar, where they, but without an orphan train, they actually stole the kids. If they saw any wayward kids, they would steal the kids and place them with parents. But that's a totally different book. But anyway, what do you think are the main themes of this book? Sophia?
Okay, so the main was obviously, and I think this is a common thread among all the books we are reading, is resilience. And she said in the end about fate and destiny and chance, but to me the main theme was still resilience and making the best of your circumstances and surviving the worst situation, just having a good outcome out of the worst of the circumstances. So it was about courage. It was about resilience. Obviously, there were some minor themes also, the Great Depression era, World War II. So those were minor themes, but this was the main theme.
Shanaz?
I think loneliness also was a theme in this.
Yeah.
And then getting second chances as well as, what to say, friendships, unexpected friendships. You know, when you're so lonely and think you have no one you can confide in or you can go to, suddenly you find, oh yeah, I can, you know, talk to them, and then they become very, like, you know, for example, the little kids like Molly and the boy who was, what's his name? Jack, is it?
Jack.
Yeah. So Jack, when they were coming in the train to be, you know, adopted or fostered, Jack was supposed to be a naughty, you know, irresponsible kind of a boy. And then suddenly they struck a friendship, which, you know, later on in life too. So unexpectedly, you know, they became friends. So there was, I think, that too. And as Sophia said, it's mostly about resilience and courage.
I liked also the theme at kind of towards the end with the portage project that she was doing. And they talk a little bit about that in the epilogue. I liked the idea of the things that you carry with you, even when you have nothing. So like, what is that central part of yourself that's always going to be there, right? You know, despite all of these, you know, hardships that are going on, if you have little things that you can carry with you, why, and why are those important? And yeah, so I liked how she kind of brought that up at the end and kind of connected it between the two different orphans carrying the necklace, the Clado necklace, and then Molly with her charm bracelet from her dad and such. So I think that's part of it too. And just finding your family, finding your place, what feels like home.
No, yeah. I don't feel bad about not, you know, cleaning out my attic.
Right.
No, I think it's about belonging and finding your place in this world. I think it's about finding a new family if you can't find a family. It's connecting with people. And I also think in a lot of ways, the parallels, you know, between like Molly and Niam, Vivian, the parallel is being misunderstood, that people don't know who you really are. And because protection is one of the themes, is when you are so out there, you have to protect yourself. That the resilience comes in, but how do you protect yourself? You build this wall, like Molly's wall is this goth-ness. And Vivian has been, you know, she's kind of self-protected. She's just been quiet. She's been kind of just doing things right, and still she's been in trouble. You know, she's just trying, you know, it's, yeah, but it is about really being understood for who you are. I think that's another theme. And of course, there's a whole theme of orphanages and, you know, like what happens and families and, yeah. Any other major themes in this? Love, of course. Any other major themes?
Empathy always, because when you are uprooted like that, you feel empathy for everyone who is in the same boat, in the same shoes. So she immediately felt empathy for that little child on the train. She felt empathy for Dutchie. So, and all the kids who were in this situation. So empathy is also a theme.
Erin, welcome. First thoughts and themes of the book. What are your thoughts and themes of the book?
I really enjoyed this book, and I don't really get into historic fictions easily, except for like certain eras, but I really enjoyed it. And I enjoyed how it was the comparison between the modern day and the historic, and just looking at the similarities there. So I enjoyed it. It was I was pleasantly surprised.
And what do you think are the themes of the book?
I think one thing is resilience. Perseverance, I don't know, something to that effect. Sure. And also I think another theme is, like, they call it carrying your ghosts with you, but your trauma.
In the very first chapter, right? I liked, you know, now that you bring up the ghost theme, I liked how they said that how the ghosts change once someone dies. I know there's this, there's this song, YouTube joke, meme, whatever you want to call it, this parody where someone does this crazy thing that how even murderers and rapists and really bad people become heroes once they die. Because like somehow once someone dies, the living is able to forgive them, or somehow they only look at their good points. So I love how she's like, how the ghost of Da, of her dad, how even that ghost changed. I was like, wow, yeah, really, good theme. Let's see, what else? What do you guys want to discuss? Favorite characters? Favorite scenes. I'll tell you what, for me, I don't know about favorite, but the scene where, you know, they're on this train and Carmine is holding on to her the whole time. Like, it's almost like she's adopted him. And then this family finds Carmine and they want to take him. And he's holding on to her. And she's like, it's okay, go, you know, they're going to take you. And that scene just broke my heart because she's, you know, she's letting him go. But, oh, man, that scene was just rough for me. You know, it's just, it's one of those things, you know, it's, oh, I think that was probably one of my rough scenes. Shanas?
For me, when, you know, Dutchie finds Vivian in the hotel lobby, is it, where he was going to play the violin or piano, what was it?
The piano, piano, right? The piano. Yeah.
And then she was waiting because she didn't want to go have a couple of drinks. So she was waiting there. And then suddenly somebody comes, approaches her, says, I don't remember exactly, but still, you know, they found each other, which was nice. But I don't know if it happens in real life because it was a very Bollywood kind of meeting for me. You know, but still, that was nice, as you, because the book was a little heavy up to that part where, you know, especially where they're describing how one child is shifted from one house to the other, you know, from one parent or one adopted situation to the next. And through those situations, some of them are good, some of them are bad, you know, and then suddenly she finds a really good household where they take her in and give her all the love. And then she finds Dutchie also. So, her, you know, it's like a circle where all her sufferings are coming to an end. So that part was where she finds Dutchie for me was like, wow, that's what I was waiting for.
I just felt like the book had a lot of happy endings in a sense.
Yeah.
And it was contrived happy endings. You know, like you have Dutchie comes back. Of course, they kill him. Just to kind of throw some stuff in. But, you know, Dutchie comes back, finds Carmine at the end. They find what happens with Maeve. I mean, of course, loose ends are tied, but everything was very neatly, every bit of it was tied up in a bow. And, you know, there were no questions left at the end. And I felt like there should have been, because this is, you know, like, I know they're doing the research, where, who, what, and also with Dutchie, the chances that he was found by this really kind family, adopted, taught to play the piano, and becomes this piano player from being Dutchie was a little far-fetched for me, to be very honest. I was like, okay, I'll buy into it. And then there's the whole sense of all these kids, they all got a rescue for them to become this. None of these kids, I guess, made it on their own. I mean, not that, I mean, I don't even know what I'm saying here. I don't know what I'm, what my point is. Like, should a kid make it on their own? You know, no, but all these kids got rescued by good households. There was no, what I mean is no kid made it with a moderate ish householdish. I don't know. Erin.
Well, I mean, they all had, I'd say, bad experiences too. And I think the amount of bad experiences that were happening was not shocking to somebody, I think, even today, that's familiar a bit with our foster system. But I do think it's a bit disturbing. You know, I do think it's real, but I think it's a bit disturbing. But I don't know what other outcome that people could have expected with the program. It was during the Depression. You're talking about like tons of kids, and they're just, you know, for lack of a better term, I don't even know if they were selling them, because to be fair, I don't know that any family was paying to get these kids. It was like free labor, essentially. And they were being advertised a bit as that, you know, as free labor. And there was not any enforcement of the rules of like making sure that they got an education, making sure that they were well taken care of. And from what I can tell, there also wasn't like checking to make sure that the people that were taking these kids in actually had the resources to take care of them. So, I mean, not surprising in a situation like that, that these kids were taken advantage of and abused and neglected. And they all had that. They all had an aspect of that. So I think that's where the resilience comes in, is like, I don't know if I could survive one house like that, let alone, you know, a couple. And they, and these kids were, and they were able to go on to live relatively normal lives.
Yeah, I think it shows the element of resilience is that you put up with whatever, and then at some point, when you turn it over and you are given love and you're watered well and you're well cared for, people can grow and be nurtured and flourish despite their past. I think it's a book about healing, essentially, that no matter how broken you are, you can still heal. But Erin, to your point of, you know, I don't know if I could have survived this. It's not just, could you have survived this, but could you have survived this as a 9-year-old kid, as an 8-year-old kid? I mean, I don't know if I could have survived this now as an adult, you know, but put yourself in the position of an 8 or a 9-year-old kid. Can you survive that? It's a whole different mindset when you think of it that way. What else? So what are the favorite scenes?
So can I speak? Sure. Sorry, Shanaz, I have to leave. So I will just quickly tell you my favorite scene was the scene when she was taken in by Mrs. Larson, and she was taken in her little boarding house, and she got to enjoy a bath for the first time and had her own room. So I think that was very heartwarming to see her finally getting some relief in life. So that was favorite scene. And about the themes, quickly, one more thing I want to mention, that many of the mothers in this book were just bad. Practically Vivian's mom, Molly's mom, the two foster moms. So the and in some sense Vivian herself, because she gave away the baby, and I kind of questioned that decision, that the baby was born out of love, so why did she do what she did? And I think most of you can throw light on it, but I have to leave. So I quickly have to make another point, that this book was also a time capsule in a sort of sense, that it detailed that era very well. So we could see that which cars were used. Elizabeth Arden was there, Chrysler was there, the radio was coming in. So it was nice to see. It reminded me of Disney's The Carousel of Progress, in some sense, that you could see exactly what was going on in that era, how people were living and what were they enjoying it, what not. So I have to say bye to you. So it was a good book. Thank you for selecting it.
Thank you for coming, even for a brief moment. But thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Okay. You know, I was reading some of the reviews on Goodreads for this book, because, you know, we talked about all the bad mothers, right? And one of the reviews really, you know, everyone's like, oh, I love this book, I love this book, I love this book. And then one person's review was, I hate this book because of Dina's character and what this author is trying to push her agenda about, you know, whatever agenda she's trying to push. And, you know, people aren't that way. And she's just, you know, if you want to write a book, write a book. Don't try to be political. And, you know, and it was like, oh my God, it was like a 2-star review, all because of Dina. Just one character, Dina. And this person went off on it. And then you had other comments where someone says, thank you so much for your review. I will not read. I will not waste my time on this book then. Thank you so much. I will not waste my time on this book. And I'm like, oh my God, no, don't read the book. But yeah, like it was like, and then there were people who were saying, no, you know, this is real. Characters like Dina exist. There are real people who refuse to accept, you know, like Dina refused to accept Molly's, was she vegetarian or vegan? Like refused to accept that and just kept putting meat in her food, just kept doing it and kept talking negative about everything else. You know, it was just constant, but we know people are like that. So I don't see the author pushing an agenda. I personally do not see this book as pushing an agenda at all. But yeah, but some people, yeah, someone thought that. Jen.
Oh, I was just going to say, it sounds like that reviewer might have been triggered maybe by a personal experience with a similar person in their life, maybe. And that was what brought out that negative review. Maybe. Hard to say.
Right. Yes. But yeah, you know, all the moms were bad except for Mrs. Nielsen. She was good.
She was good. And she was a good caretaker. But did she have that loving mother connection with Vivian I don't know. It seemed to me that the Nielsens were more clinical and maybe a little cold, maybe detached maybe is a better word for it than others might have been. Like, it seemed like Vivian had a really close relationship with like Mrs. Murphy, the boarding house person, in the brief time that she was there. It seemed like they really connected on their shared Irish history, or even Mrs. Larson, the teacher. Like, it seemed like they like really recognized each other as people, and like saw each other as for who they really are. And it seemed like the Nielsens really wanted to make Vivian into their previous child, Vivian, while they were, you know, providing her food and shelter and providing her a good education and having her join the store and kind of take over from it. And so I think there were some things that they did really well. I think there was a little bit that maybe was still missing there.
Erin?
I agree with Jen. I think also that maybe part of what that family was going through, they lost a child and, you know, in a middle childhood age, that had to have been hard and traumatic on them. And so I think maybe a little part of them was still protecting themselves and their hearts, because if they don't give that over fully to this new child, then they don't have to stand the chance or the risk of getting hurt again. And in a way, I think that Vivian herself was a bit like that when she first came in. She was okay with it, because if she gave in to that and like built this relationship and things went poorly like it did before, you know, then where would she be? You know, she'd already been through that with the father at the one house that ended up like sexually abusing her. You know, she did actually, I think, form a bond, a relationship with him, like in a healthy way at first, and then it became very not healthy. So I think it was the two entities protecting themselves and their hearts, and but yet trying to live in a way that was similar, but it still wasn't that family loving unit.
There were two things, real quick, Shana, in this book that for me didn't quite make sense or felt out of character or felt like, I'm not sure, like the father who tried to rape her. Because like you said, Erin, she always had a good relationship with him. Like, it was right from the beginning. It was always like he was fine. And then boom, one fine day, it's like he turns into this guy. I'm like, what's going on here? Like, I was like, what am I reading? Like, it just threw me off. His character threw me off. Let's put it that way. I did not expect that, because I would have expected it if the author would have dropped some kind of hints. Maybe I missed the hints, but there were no subtle hints even. There were no, oh, his hand grazed my butt when I was walking by. Like, there was nothing that even said something. And then all of a sudden you have this guy potentially drunk and wants this girl. I'm just like, what? So that's the first thing. And then the second thing that question I have was, I do not understand why she gave up her child. Like, I do not, like, even when, you know, Sophia left, she's like, I don't know why she gave up the child. That was a question I had for you guys. I don't know why she gave up the child, because the child was made in love. The child is a memory of Duchy. I don't know. Dr. Jen.
Yes, I have thoughts. the hints about the relationship with the foster dad. So the only hint that I noticed was that he made an offhand comment at some point about how the wife only wants to sleep and she didn't smell good and she like never cleaned herself down there. And I was like, that's a really odd thing to say to a child. Like, why would you say that to the child? And then I was like, okay, so something's going to happen with that. So that was my one clue on that side. as far as the giving up the child, so she talks about it a little bit at the end, in that she didn't feel like she deserved to have the child, for one thing, and didn't feel like she would be a good enough mother to the child, given her experiences with, you know, poor mothering, I guess, in her past. So that's what she said, at least in the book. But
Donna's.
Yeah, as Dr. Jen was saying, I think at one point he said his wife only wanted to sleep with him. That's all. She was only ready for, you know, all the time she wanted to just have sex with him or whatever that was. And then I think in one page, if I remember, she went to give her some food or something, and then she lifted up, you know, she pulled the blanket, and then she was, you know, her whole under, you know, was shown. And she got so scared and she had to run away. Vivian, if I remember correctly, because that the was like all
the,
for
the
me.
Woman's underpants were shown, not his.
Not a woman didn't even have underpants, Janice.
Hey, wait, wait, she was naked. But that has nothing to do with...
Wait, so she... So for me, I thought maybe that lady was a little bit of, you know, wanted sex the whole time, whereas the man was not able to do it because, as you said, he gave explanation saying she smelled, she was not, you know, clean and all that. Whereas Vivian was very clean. She used to keep herself, you know, groomed very well. So maybe in that situation, I don't know, you know, maybe little hints like, you know, what Dr. Jen was saying. Men, you don't know when they turn, you know, and
yeah,
sex
but, I mean,
is something but, which turns them like crazy.
But Dr. Jen, you're right. You're right. There was that sign where I was like, why is he talking to this young girl about sex? And I'm like, oh my God, something. There was that. You're right. A moment. But even that, I don't know. I didn't like it. Nobody likes when a child is, you know, molested or raped. Nobody likes it. Okay. So I don't mean it. I didn't like it. Oh, I can't handle it. No, I just didn't like that. That element was added into this book. I felt like, could they have done this book without that element and that scene? That's all I'm saying.
I think maybe the author wanted to show different situations where, you know, this is also a potential situation for a foster child or an adopted child, even to this present day situation. So I think she just wanted to focus and not take away, you know, the readers from such a small, I mean, it's not a small incident, but it is a huge one. But I think she didn't want the readers to focus on that. So she just gave it
I mean, there are so many situations that take place in fostering, in adopting, in this whole thing. You cannot potentially write a book about every single situation. I felt it was a thrown, contrived situation. She's got like a list of things. Okay, child, this, okay, I've got to get somebody molested. Okay, let's see who. Can I get Niam molested or can I get Molly molested? Let's just do Niam. That's fine. Okay, who's going to molest her? Done. Check. It felt like that more than it felt like a natural progression of the story to me. Erin?
I really wasn't surprised at all. And it wasn't just that one scene that Dr. Jen mentioned. I feel like what I saw was he was looking for a replacement for his wife. I mean, like from the very beginning, he's the one that goes and looks for like a younger girl that can take care of these kids. And maybe at first it was not nefarious. Maybe at first it was like, I just need some help with the kids because my wife's shutting down and I can't handle this by myself. And then in his mind, he starts to replace his wife with Neve. And then before you know it, you know, he's also putting to her a lot more mature duties and responsibilities than what a child that age should have. And she's been able to handle that with the kids, whether she should be put in that position or not, like that's happened. And I think then he just starts to think about her in a more mature light than what she is. And I'm not excusing what he did, but I mean, like, those were the clues that I started to see, is like, he sees her as a mature, more adult-ish person. And so, you know, with that usually comes some issues with boundaries. And then, you know, there we go. But the other thing that was a clue to me was that he was isolating himself. And so he would like go out and be like hunting for all these long time. And when you remove yourself from human contact, like, that messes with, you know, your, I think, ability to discern like right and wrong and proper boundaries. Like, you have isolated yourself and it kind of set up yourself for some issues there. And I think it was a combination of all of that. Like, he was having some troubles. And again, I don't know that, I don't really feel like he started out with the intent to do that. I think it was something that just came along the way, and he had troubles with boundaries.
And what are your thoughts on the Niam leaving her child? I mean, not leaving, like giving her child up.
I did understand a little bit. At first I was like shocked, like, why would she do this? But when you think about the situation, she'd never had a proper mother figure in her mind. Like, not even Miss Nielsen was the relationship, the mother relationship that she would like to have. She talked about when she's explaining it to, what's the modern, the younger girl who's in foster care? I can't remember her name.
Molly.
Thank you. When she's explaining it to Molly, she is also mentioning about her mom. Her mom clearly had some untreated mental health issues and was having mental health crisis, it sounds like, through a lot of her childhood. And so she thinks, like, I must be set up for that too. And that is actually a super common phenomenon. We hear it in genetic counseling all the time. So I felt like that was really real and relatable, and a reason why some people actually choose not to have children or to put off having children for a long time is because they're afraid that even if they haven't exhibited it, that they will, and that will make them a bad parent, and or that they might pass it on to their child. So I felt like that was very relatable. And the combination of those two things, plus she just lost her financial, you know, part of her financial stability and her family stability. Like, the Nielsens were there and they would support her, but they were not, she did not make any mentioning words about them being like grand, like, they're not, I don't think they would have seen themselves as grandparents so much, you know, they've been like a clinical, very clinical, as what we've talked about. So I think it was a combination of those three things that really led to her deciding to put the baby up for adoption. I think she regretted it, obviously, in the long run. And I think she underestimated her resilience and ability to be a good parent, because she ended up being a really good parent, if you want to use that word, to Molly.
Or yes, maybe, you know,
go ahead. Sorry.
Or maybe it was so painful for her, you know, losing Dutchie. So maybe she thought it's a reminder. I mean, the baby is a reminder. Maybe she, in her immaturity or maturity or lack of proper mother figure in her life, maybe she thought, if I just give the child away, I'm not going to be reminded of him. I don't know. So, you know, human brain thinks in all weird ways. So,
okay. Anything else before we go into favorite characters and not so favorite characters? No? Okay. Favorite characters. Favorite characters. I mean, I'm obviously our protagonist, Vivian. I look at Vivian as two characters. I literally look at her as two people. One as Vivian, the 91-year-old woman, and I look at Vivian as Niam, the young girl, from like 8 to 23. So they're almost like two characters to me in this book. You know, it just hit me. I was looking and say, oh, I like Vivian. And I'm going, wait, that is Niam. I'm like, wait a minute there. But I think what I liked was, I liked seeing the older Vivian. I like seeing that, like you said, the mother figure Vivian, the empathetic Vivian, the caring Vivian who just gave her Anne of the Green Gables book. I don't know, just I loved watching that Vivian that opened up to Molly. So that was really my favorite character, was the older person character, which is Vivian. And the person I hated the most, you know, all the Foster people, you know, obviously I hated them. But I think there is an element of Mr. Sorensen that just is a sore for me. Sorensen, sore. It's just that in the beginning, I thought, oh, well, he's actually being kind and trying to help her. But then when he was like, yeah, I don't believe you. And it was very much like, I don't know. There's something I didn't hate him, but I hated him, if that makes any sense. I just wanted to punch him a few times and then I'd be good. That's all. You know, just a little bit, you know, nothing major. Don't want him to be like run over or anything. Just, you know. But yeah, that's me. Anyone else? Shana's.
Of course, you know, I liked Vivian.
The older one or the younger one? Or you think they're both the same? You think
that's a good question. That's a good question. For me, I like Vivian as a whole, whether younger or older. But then that's obvious, right? So for me, the other character I liked was Ralph, you know, Dina's husband, because he was trying to protect Molly, trying to give her a stable life, trying to get her from his wife, who was always being mean to her. So he was trying to, in a way, protect her from his wife. So I thought I liked that character too. And the worst was for me was that Mr. and Mrs. Byron, or how you say that, I don't know. I hated both of them. Like, you know, are you that stupid? You have so many kids and you're going and getting an 8-year-old to come and help you with? I don't know. I didn't like both the characters. You know,
the one who molested her? You mean you're talking about
exactly. The Mr. and Mrs. I didn't like both of them at all. The others also I'm able to forgive, even if they have a little bit of, you know, negative things. But these two, they're not even fit to raise children, let alone give birth. Whatever the reasons may be. But still, yeah, that's my negative and positive characters.
My favorite character was probably Dutchie. I really liked him. I mean, I liked him as an older person. I liked him as a younger person. I know he was like, they were referring to his criminality and gangs on the streets. I think he was just trying to survive the best way he could. And he had a pretty realistic outlook about the world. And you could tell his tenderness with the baby, with Carmine, like he still had a good heart, you know? So I liked him throughout the book and was like devastated when he died. My least favorite character, it was Dina and then the boyfriend's mom, that's the housekeeper. I did not.
Carrie.
Yes. She was just so judgmental. And I think even in the end, I don't think she still totally understood the value that Molly had to Vivian. So yeah, I did not like her character almost as much as I didn't like Dina.
I think Terry was jealous or envious, rather. Jealous, whatever you want to call it, of this connection that she saw Molly developing with Vivian. And it was like, so it was kind of like, what are you doing? Why are you talking to her? Just do your work and go leave, you know, like, because there was that connection and Terry was the maid. So, yeah. Dr. Chen?
Yeah, I was going to say about Terry, too. I think it was Vivian's house was her job. And I feel like Molly kind of came into her workplace and was messing with things. And then also the attic was supposed to be her job and she didn't want to do it, but like it was a part of she was assigned to like clean out the attic, to like remove things. And that didn't end up happening. And it, you know, turns out that maybe what they did was better and more fulfilling to them. But I think Terry was disappointed because it didn't get cleaned out. That job didn't get completed for whatever reason. So yeah, I agree with you. I don't think she quite understood the value.
Okay. Very good. Anything else about this book that you want to discuss? Pluses, minuses, anything? Rifat?
I read this book long, long time ago. And, you know, when I read it, I also read after some time Before We Were Yours. And, you know, they both are beautiful books and they both kind of, you know, now that when I was thinking half the time, I was thinking of that. And so some of the characters were like, you know, as you guys were talking, I didn't remember, but I do remember really liking Orphan Train. And what I really liked about the book, and maybe you guys have already discussed it, is that, you know, they talk about pretty much three time lines, one's of Molly and one's of Vivian and one's from Jane Eyre. So the similarity that I think maybe that's what the author was trying to do as well, that it doesn't matter, you know, what the systems are in place or not, whether they're like, you know, red tapes or legalities included, in the end, it all depends upon the person who ends up getting an orphan, you know, if he's nice or she's nice, whether it's in 1800s or 1900s or 2000, it's going to end up the way the person is. So that was very interesting to me. That was my take on the book initially when I read it. And I still, when I went through a little bit, and that's why I realized that there was a reason she brings in Jane Eyre, because she was also going through the same thing. So yeah, that was interesting. And overall, I don't remember many characters. We were talking about favorite. I do remember liking Vivian and Molly. Molly, I liked because she was going through a lot of struggles, not only being of certain age and being, if I remember, she was a pretty good student. And then she was like, you know, having to face all those challenges and being an orphan and rejected in many ways. So I liked her character a lot, if I remember. And Vivian too. I don't remember any character that stood out that she wasn't able to portray in a nice way. But of course, there were a whole bunch of those, you know, people that we know, which were in the story to, of course, give the message and to bring the reality out that this is what happened, you know, or this is what happens even today. So that's what I liked about the book, that she had a good take on it. And, you know, the responsibility of the person, if they're able to do it, or if they have kind heart, they will be able to do it. If they don't have it, doesn't matter. I mean, we think that the foster care system today is very good, or since we have so many, you know, like the systems in place, it is really sad. It's sadder than before. I think it's, I don't know, but I know that when I worked with the low socioeconomic, and I saw that it was just, you know, it was very selfish on the people's side, because they get a certain amount of money per child. So, you know, and it's a very easy way to show your home and tell them, okay, we have enough, you know, accommodation and all that. So that kind of is sad part today. And then, of course, when the orphan train was, they were at least honest about it, that we want kids to come and work for us. So, you know, it is messed up, unfortunately. I personally don't think that all the way from there to here, we have reached anywhere in terms of placing kids who do not have parents.
I was bringing up Before We Were Yours, and Aaron wasn't there. Aaron hadn't come in yet to book club. And then it was Sophia, Shauna's, and Dr. Jen, and they're all looking at me like, huh? And I was like, well, this is one of our book club books. And then I'm so glad you brought up Before We Were Yours, because I mentioned, I was like, guys, do you remember Before We Were Yours? And everyone's like, what? Like, Aaron, where are you? So I thought about that. But bringing up Before We Were Yours, in that, when the kids were being adopted, the organization was getting money, was getting paid a lot of money from these parents that adopted the kids. So if anybody took the kids from them, they got a lot of money from them. And, you know, that system was broken in the sense that the organization was so corrupt, it would even send letters to the parents again and say, you need to send us more money because the real parents want the kids back. And so, you know, and these parents adopted these kids and they loved their kids, and they don't want to give up the kids. So they're going to be like, oh, here's another $3,000, you know, that kind of thing. But my question is, in this one, An Orphan Train, where was the money exchange? Like,
I think it was a total charitable organization, and it was a religious based ministry. So I do not think that there was any exchange of money in place of the children. I'm sure like there were people giving money to the orphanage that had them first in New York and like paying for the trip across. But the whole point was, since they were a non-for-profit, they were not making enough money to take care of these kids long-term. So they basically had to like find places. And I think this, you know, this was historically, this was happening before, because Orphan Train happened even earlier than what the setting of this book is. At least they said that when they were talking about like the people who had gone through. So she was actually, Vivian or Neith was at the end of the Orphan Train era. And it was after that, that then you had these little organizations like what they talked about in Before We Were Yours. And that's when they started learning, well, you can charge people a buku of money and we can make money off of these kids. And then they started stealing kids, you know. Before, there was just the Catholic Church or other church ministries thinking that they could place kids in better homes, which, to be honest, like, Neve probably would have been better off with her mom than some of these people that she was placed with, right? So,
Janice?
Because I was doing some research because it really intrigued me, you know, when this orphan train. So I did. And then there was one particular thing which said between 1854 to 1929, orphan trains transported more than 200,000 orphaned, abandoned, homeless children. Many were first generation Irish Catholic immigrants from the coastal cities in the eastern United States to the Midwest for adoption, which often turned out to be indentured servitude. So they have to just serve out, you know, a few years till they become adults, I think. So no money was exchanged anywhere. It was just, you know, they just wanted to get people to adopt or, you know, not adopt, but it was actually, you know, basically labor without paying them. Because I think there were so many homeless, orphaned, and, you know, kids. They didn't have space to take care of, space and money to take care of all of them. So they just transported them, just passing city by city and just giving out children. You know, it's like handing out a piece of paper. So this program was founded by one Mr. Charles Loring Brace or something. And then the Children's Aid Society tried to keep track. I don't know what they kept track. And then I think this is a precursor to, as you said, modern foster care system.
Rupert?
Yeah, I was going to say maybe not a direct money, but the help they were getting, they were not paying for them. So it was like money saved, if not exchanged. So there was somebody was getting benefit out of it. And whoever started it, I kind of read it, the Charles guy, a long time ago when I read the book. I think it was 2018 or sometime like that. And I also remember some history, but I don't remember it very vividly right now. But it was benefiting somebody at the expense of little kids. That's, you know, sad. And whoever started it, and again, it's an evolution. It's like, you know, okay, if you don't have families who can take care of themselves, the way the whole societies and communities evolved, and of course, then the regulations comes and all that. And so we are where we are. It is sort of like a progression from there to there. Of course, it wouldn't be nice to take kids on a train or in car or a bus and then, you know, sort of auction them without money, but still I just feel that, you know, it's we're not there yet.
No, we're not. We're not. And it's very sad. It's very sad. Anything else about this book, Erin?
One of the things that really interested me was the essay that Molly was writing about portages, right? So it kind of inspired me to, I've picked up journaling recently. I've never been good about that in my entire life, although I've tried it multiple times. And I was thinking, I'm just going to write like an extended entry about what I have taken with me or left behind at certain stages in my life. Because I think that it's a really interesting reflection. So I really, really just loved that suggestion of an exercise in the book, and it was inspiring. And I'm not done with the essay, but I have written a good number of pages now about it, and I think it's just really interesting and helpful, and maybe you all might want to do that too. Just throw that out there.
Journaling is always a good idea.
Okay, I've been thinking about it too.
Anything else about this book, or do we want to go into final rating, cover, and title and rating? Okay. Let's just do cover and title. What are your thoughts on the cover and title?
I wanted to see the cover because I forgot. Thank you, Janice.
Yeah, can I go first? I need to leave, actually. So I like the cover and I love the title. I think I didn't pick the book myself. It was for, I think somebody either recommended or for another book club. I don't remember. But when I was, I think I had it on Kindle. I liked it. The Orphan Train itself had, I had heard about it. So I thought it was really nice. The cover I like. It's kind of like, it's from a different era. Kind of seems like from a different era, at least the way it's transitioned. But I like the little girl on it. And I think it's something that, yes. So for the title five, cover four.
For me, I don't know what is wrong with my brain. It's just completely messed up. But I was just like, the longest time, like before I read the book, okay? Like Orphan Train. For whatever stupid reason, I thought it was the name. It was the name of somebody. I can't even think, why would someone's name be Orphan? But I was like, okay, Train could be a last name. Orphan Train, okay, it's the name of somebody. And then it was so, like, it was just the dumbest thing. I don't even know why my brain was so messed up. And I'm reading this, I'm going, oh my God, it's an Orphan Train. Girl, train with orphans. I was really messed up, but as far as the title goes, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's absolutely a five. And I really like the cover, really. Like, once I've read the book, like, I don't know if I would pick the book without having read the book. I mean, like, I didn't love the cover, but after I've read the book, the cover, you know, just seeing Niamh here with her red hair and just, I don't know, I just, like, and watch like her looking out the train. I don't know. It just gets my heart just looking at that cover. And I still give it a five, although I wish Dutchie was somewhere there, you know, looking at the other side. I wish someone else was there, but it's okay. But I'll still give it a five.
I can go next. I give the cover a four. It's a little too boring of a cover for me. It is demonstrative of the topic and gets you the feel of a historic fiction, but just wasn't very catching for me. I like the title though, so I'll give that a five.
I would give the title a five because it didn't, of course, you know, it's like the Orphan Train. What is it about, you know? What is it? Why is the train an orphan, you know? And then you realize, no, it's about the orphans the train carries. And cover, as Aaron said, it is kind of a little blandish because there's only one character and then there's a train with a little bit of haziness. Maybe a little bit of something, but maybe because it's an orphan, so there was only one child in it. I don't know. So for me, I would give it a 4.5 because Sophia is not here to give you a decimal point. So I'll just go with 4.5.
I think I'm the opposite. I actually really liked the cover. I think it would have drew me in with a little girl. You're like, oh, why is she in this train? I think I would have picked that up. And the title to me is like kind of bland. It's self-explanatory. Yes, it's simple. It makes sense when you read the book, but there is like zero creativity to it. There's no spark. So I don't know. So I give the cover a five and the title a four.
How would you have titled this book, Dr. Chen?
Oh, I don't know. Let me think about it.
Just make the last name first name. Train Orphan.
Becoming Vivian.
Like, I just don't get it. I'm like, what the heck? It's like, I'm trying to think, like, if I were to title this, I don't know. Something with Irish? No. Irish Train? No.
Orphans in the Train?
No.
Irish Train would be more romantic, I think.
Irish Train?
I think so.
I don't know. I gotta think about it. But okay, final rating of this book. Rifat?
I'm gonna say between 4 and 4.5. I do remember, I mean, not every character was really done beautifully. It was nice. I loved it more because of the message and whatever she was trying to relate to. But I was not too crazy about the whole writing style. Although I like the alternate narration in books, and I like how they go back and forth. I love when my brain has to think from, you know, from this chapter to the next, whether I'm listening or reading. I really like that, those little things in the book. But somehow it was kind of okay. I don't remember exactly how much I liked it, but definitely below 4.5. So maybe 4.25.
I would give it a 5 because it made me go and do some research about the orphan train, because for me, American history, to be frank, is totally new. So I love to learn about it. So any little bit of thing which makes me do some research, I love it. So for me, that name Orphan Train, I really thought it's a, it's a fiction. But then when they said, no, this is a part of the American history, I really did some research and I was like intrigued by the number of things which happened. So for me, that's why, that's the main reason why I would give it a 5, because it made me do some studying.
I'm on the same thing. I mean, I give it a 5 for my normal typical reasons, but if a book made me go on to write an essay, like it's up there. So 5.
Can I give it like a 4.75? Because it's like, it's almost there for me. The only part that I didn't like was kind of what you mentioned earlier, Shanaz, about how it's kind of predictable. It's like everything is tied up in a neat little bow, perfectly packaged, zero loose ends. So it seemed a little bit contrived with the whole story. But it definitely made me teary at a bunch of times. I really liked the characters. I already recommended it to my mom. So I definitely really liked it. So
I give this book a 5 because for one thing, it was clean. Okay. I noticed it was just very clean. It wasn't like just total big sex scenes, you know, that kind of a thing. And it was charming. There was some kind of a heart to it and a heart and a soul to it. It made me feel so much. So it was heartwarming. I also disagree with you, Rifat, on the writing of this book, because I'm like reading this book and I'm coming here. I'm going, Brad's my husband. I'm like, Brad, I hate this author. I hate her. She writes so well. I can't believe it. I hate her. Like, it's like, and then, you know, half the time I'm reading this book, I'm like, Brad, this is what an editor can do. It's like, because I'm like looking at this book from a very author point of view, like how many things are shown. Like, I'm like, even the scenes, like there's a scene where I'm pretty sure it's Miss Larson when she's in her room, like when she goes to Miss Larson's home for the first time, she describes every bit, like the wallpaper, the bed and the crisp white linen that she was on, every little bit of it, like you are there. She never, you know, told you her feelings. She showed the whole thing. That's why we felt it. And so I just felt the narration, the prose was beautiful. I don't know if it was simple or wasn't simple, I don't remember, but I remember that it was very well narrated and it was very well, like I was, like the author was holding my hand and said, here, come walk with me, let me show you something. And so that's why I give this book a 5. And yeah, and that's it, friends, for today's book club.
Before I go, if you loved this episode or any of my previous episodes, please take a moment to write me a review on Apple Podcasts. Please share this podcast with your family and friends and through your social media channels. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram on Living a Life Through Books. I'm also on Clubhouse. Look me up by name. I'm on TikTok. My tag is at Dr. Shanaz Ahmed. You can reach me through email. My address is livingalifethroughbooks@gmail.com. My website is shanazahmed.com. That is shanazahmed.com. The opening and closing music to this and all my previous episodes was composed by my husband, Brad Slavik. I'm Dr. Shanaz Ahmed with Living a Life Through Books signing off. Remember to water the seeds within you. It's time.